Big show to wrap up the week on Friday, September 20th. Ken Dixon dropped by from the Connecticut Post and Hearst Media to talk about an expose regarding the absentee ballot voting process in Bridgeport. Former state legislator Len Susio also joined the program to update us on someone who was taking advantage of the early prison release program in Connecticut. This one has a lot of people angry. And we got our weekly state capitol wrap-up from Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly. And my producer Aaron Johnson told me about how he and his buddies, way back in his college days, used to be able to get coffee and condiments when they were needed.
Connecticut has a lot of problems.
Here's the man who will solve them.
Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli,
WICC 600.
And not to mention the coffee is perfect today. I don't know how I did it, but the coffee was just brewed correctly. Did you find that, Aaron? I know you and I filled up right before we came in the studio here. Plus, somebody was good enough to, in the kitchen here at WICC, we didn't have to use those little creamers today. There's a bottle of creamer in there, the whole bottle. It's got a flavor to it,
You're not a fan of the tiny creamers?
Am I a fan of the tiny creamers? They don't seem to taste as good as the stuff out of the bottle.
I can agree with that.
It's probably when you were in college and there was nothing left in the dorm in the dorm room of the apartment. Did you chug like creamer out of a bottle? Did you ever go?
No. It wasn't that.
Because I know you said you did salad dressing sandwiches.
Yep. Salad dressing sandwiches, mustard sandwiches. But no, honestly, it was funny for that.
Yeah.
You used to get because there was a Dunkin' on campus.
Uh-huh.
Find an underclassman, make buddy-buddy with the underclassman.
Underclassman?
And because they have swipes on their card, and then you use their swipes. So.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Let's back up here. Before we get to the hardcore stuff here, wait a minute. So when you were in college,
yes,
becoming a future leader of America.
Uh-huh.
And
I like how you put that, by the way.
Well, because I'm trying to contrast that with the dastardly thing you just did here. You found an underclassman and did what?
So the way it would work out, they would have underclassmen at Southern had to have swipes on there. They have to have a meal plan.
Yeah.
Once you become an upperclassman, you have a kitchen. You don't really get as many
junior,
swipes.
Senior.
Exactly.
So freshman, sophomore have to be on the meal plan.
Yes.
At Southern. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
okay.
So you would make friends with an underclassman and be like,
you
hey,
make
man.
Friends. Is that how the mob used to make friends? Hey, come here. Come here. I want to protect you from something, quote
yeah,
unquote.
So, get a couple swipes into the cafeteria
yeah.
or, into Dunkin' Donuts.
And what would
Donuts.
You do?
Yeah, just get food. Just be like, oh, swipe me in. Be like, okay, swipe, and then you
Wait
go right
Wait a
in.
Minute. Hold it.
I wasn't the only one to do this.
Oh,
I actually
there we
wasn't
go.
The originator
there
of this. I wasn't the originator of this.
So were these swipes that they perhaps weren't going to use?
Yeah, but they have unlimited.
As
an underclassman, you have unlimited. So that's why, you make friends with the underclassmen, and then they swipe you in, and you keep on going. Because as an upperclassman, when you have a kitchen in your dorm.
Yeah, no, they expect you to buy your own food.
Exactly. And, we talked about the salad dressing sandwiches and mustard
yeah.
sandwiches, so food was a commodity.
Okay, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do. So you make friends with it, whether it was, walking around campus or, playing pickup basketball. Be like, hey, man, you going to con? Yeah, swipe me in? Okay, cool. Yeah, I wasn't the. I swear, Paul, I wasn't the only one to do this.
So this is a widespread thing, you're saying?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. Absolutely.
Does the the administration doesn't care because people are going and getting the product, and they're probably making a cut off of or how the payment works. I have no idea with Dunkin' Donuts whether it's a flat fee. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great.
So did you have, your designated person, or was this,
No, you used to have, one or two, because, somebody might be in class at the time you're really trying to go, and so... So you had to spread it out
yeah.
enough where you had, one person here to, okay, maybe your lunch person, your dinner person, kind of want breakfast here. So you split it up that way. You got to be innovative when you're in college.
I get that. I understand that. That was your entrepreneurial spirit, is what you were telling me.
Yeah, you could say that. I also was hungry.
Now, did the people whose swipes you, let's say, borrowed, mm-hmm. Procured, did they ever try and cash in their chips with you guys? Like, we'll give you coffee, you buy us booze? You
don't have to answer that. I don't think it ever got that bad. It was more like you kind of just hung out, you know, just, you know, talk to them, you know, like, okay, like, hey, you need a couple bucks for this or that.
Oh,
like,
so in other words, for you.
It never got
for
that
using,
bad.
So for you using their coffee swipes, they got the high honor and privilege to just hang with you guys.
Yeah. I mean, it is one thing to say you're going to the upperclassman side of campus. That is a cool thing to say.
Oh, like, nice.
Come over and just hang out for a little while.
Nice.
Yeah. It was very nice.
Nice. So you know, you're getting your coffee and your cream and sugar and stuff like that. And these underclassmen who are obviously looking for guidance on the modern college campus.
See, if they're smart, they'll when they become upperclassmen.
Well, there you go.
They'll return the
favor.
You
know what this is? I see what this is, Aaron Johnson. This is like playing. What do they say? Pay it forward.
Yes,
that's exactly what this is.
Exactly what it is.
Nice.
I had it happen to me once or twice when I was an underclassman, and I looked around and I said, "Huh, I think I know what's going on here." I had my aha moment a few times.
So after your indoctrination to all this, you get it.
Yes, absolutely.
Nice.
Absolutely.
I didn't know this went on America's college campuses here.
Oh, there's a lot that goes
really?
On. Really? I've been out of school now for what, 4 years?
Yeah.
4 or 5 years?
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure they're still inventing new things.
So the swipe, at least at Southern, becomes like its own brand of currency.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
It is absolutely its own set of currency. Like, oh, you trying to get into con hall? Okay, here's a swipe. What am I going to now do for this swipe?
Exactly.
Or what am I going to get for this swipe?
What am I going to get for this?
Yep.
This should be incorporated into, like, the economics classes there and the entrepreneurial stuff 101 there.
I wouldn't mind teaching it.
Absolutely. I got to get a hold of my buddy there at Southern, Mr. Dunkley there, who I visit every couple of years, give a guest lecture there. I can say, Jerry, is this really happening there? Yeah, I don't know.
Jerry might tell you a lot more other stuff.
Oh, trust me. Yeah. Because we go back in radio many years. Well, Aaron Johnson, that's good. Now, see, I learned something today. See, when I was, I went to school back in the days of, we didn't have swipe cards. Magnetic things weren't even invented back then. Magnetism didn't exist when I was in school. Well, Aaron Johnson, now I view your entrepreneurial spirit in a whole new different light here. Yes.
He might not agree with you, but he promises to listen. Join Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600, 203-333-9422.
And we are here at 3:32, 28 before 4 o'clock. Great piece today from Hearst Connecticut Media and the Connecticut Post regarding, follow-up as to what's going on with absentee ballots here in Bridgeport. No surprise. Some say the result that we had a couple of weeks ago on the 10th regarding how the primary went connected to absentee ballots. A lot of folks previous to that would call this show and say, you watch, it's the absentees. We all know what happened. Marilyn Moore, one of the polls. Mayor Joe Ganim getting a big margin with the absentees, propelling him to victory. Marilyn Moore saying that she will form a write-in campaign, but she is pushing the state to initiate a formal investigation. Joining us right now, Ken Dixon. Ken, along with Megan Freeman, Kelly Cultes, Bill Cummings, Ignacio LaGuarda, and DJ Simmons all have a big story today on the current absentee ballot controversy. Ken, Paul here on WICC. How are you?
Hey, Paul, thanks for naming all the reporters who did the work on the story.
Well, Ken, it's stories like this. I say to people all over the place, even young people, this is why you need newspapers, and you guys did a good job on this. Ken, I'm reading stuff here. I've read the story twice, and it's disturbing. And I know some people are going to say, well, there's always going to be problems with absentees, but you know what? You know what, Ken, I don't buy that. And we landed a guy on the moon, two of them, in fact, in 1969. We should be able to get this right, you know?
Well, yeah, but you've got the high stakes involved of a mayoral campaign and also the right of people to have access to the polls. And a lot of people, for whatever reasons, are unable physically to get there, whether they're old or infirm. those are the two major reasons for absentee ballots. Then you have the people who are out of town on work.
Sure, military.
The polls that day.
Yeah.
Military, right, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Ken, if you can, if somebody hasn't seen this story yet and we urge them to go view it or buy the paper or go view it at the Connecticut Post online, what are some of the issues you found here? And you highlight one woman in particular and then another who didn't want to be named. Tell us about that.
I think there are cases where there are overzealous party people who who knows what their motivations are, but they end up trying to help people help. There's a, you can put that in quotes, help people fill out their ballots and making sure that the candidate they're backing gets the vote. And the state law prohibits people from being even near those filling out the absentee ballots. Certainly, there are dozens of cases of people who took out absentee ballot applications, and you can take them to your neighbor. You can take them to the senior citizen housing, and they fill out the application, then. It gets to the town clerk's office, and the town clerk mails, checks to see if they're registered, and then they mail absentee ballots with envelopes to the voters.
Generated by the voices in my head, but we're talking right now to Ken Dixon, Connecticut Post, the Hearst Connecticut Media, regarding a story, big expose on absentee ballots in Bridgeport. Ken, near the front of the story, you quote a woman, Rhonda Latham, who lives on the east side, a pretty startling thing, quote, "I did not want to vote for Ganim." And she continued, "These people push you into voting and they do it for you." That's not exactly a ringing endorsement, Ken, of the process.
Well, if it's true, it's a violation of state law, and it's a Class D felony.
What? Now, I don't know whether you spoke to her or one of the reporters. I assume she was. She sounds like she's pretty honked off on the whole thing.
Well, yeah, we had the back and forth of the woman asking what she had against Ganim, and what did Marilyn Moore ever do for you? And she responded by saying, "What did Ganim ever do for me?"
Who was that woman? Is there any idea who that woman was that was at least allegedly Ken badgering her?
No, I did not do that part of the reporting. So
okay.
I'd say we're not sure.
Okay. But do you have an idea and you're just being careful about it?
Maybe it's the latter, Paul.
Okay. Well, no, listen, I've been doing this myself, Ken, so I agree with that. You also highlight, and I don't know whether this is just because of how the process is set up, Ken, I guess a couple of convicted felons out on parole receive ballots as well?
Yeah, there are a wide range of problems that were uncovered, and people who are unregistered, people who maybe they thought that since they were no longer in prison, they could apply just re-register. Who knows what their motivations were, or even if it was them, maybe it was somebody else.
And I know, out of fairness, you did speak with the mayor, or you were somebody on the staff there, spoke with the mayor. What was his reaction to all this?
He's trying to get out in front of it a little bit by asking the Secretary of the State to send staff down to perform more scrutiny down here. Mm-hmm. He also hinted that possibly Marilyn Moore's people were involved in the irregularities, but his team certainly outnumbered them. Democratic Town Committee was doing a full court press on this, and Marilyn didn't really have that many people involved in the issuing of ballot applications.
You know, Ken, and we're talking to Ken Dixon from the Connecticut Post and Hearst Connecticut Media. I spoke to Jean Rabinow a few days ago on this show from the League of Women Voters here, Bridgeport area, and she explained to me, Ken, the process that's supposed to go on here with the observers and everything. If you are in senior housing or you're in maybe a nursing home or an old age home, what is your, do you guys there who are looking into this, any idea on how why if at all that process is followed? Because even Gene said, you know, they hope it is, but it's hard to verify that.
Yeah, some of these places should have people who are certified to assist people in filling out ballots, and a lot of that seems to have fallen through the cracks. If you would like today's news, I can tell you were talking about a possible investigation. The State Elections Enforcement Commission just scheduled a special meeting to for Monday afternoon to consider the Secretary of the State's recommendation today that a probe into the irregularities commence.
And I know, Ken, you folks have spoken to experts, and I have too, and it's kind of interesting trying to hash this out. And again, the guest is Ken Dixon here on Connecticut Today. I know you've spoken to some people who say, yeah, okay, 1,200, you know, absentees out of 10,000. Yeah, it's kind of a lot. I know you've had other people say, well, no, it's happened before, and other people who say, yeah, I'm not really, you know, all that surprised. So even from that point of view, Ken, it's hard to get a hard bearing on this, isn't it?
No, I don't think so. I think it's the usual Democratic Town Committee in Bridgeport shenanigans that goes back. I've got some copies of newspapers here from 1986.
Yeah.
Aldermen, four others face vote fraud charges that I actually worked on back then.
Are you saying, I'm just being kind of tongue-in-cheek here, so you're saying this doesn't surprise you, Ken?
At this point, very little surprises.
Well, yeah, you can chalk it up to having done this for so many years, right? Very little surprise. But again, I don't know, Ken. It's funny. As you say, this goes back several times, and we've seen, you know, things go a little awry in Hartford and also in New Haven. But I think people get frustrated, Ken, because, you know, they see this sort of stuff happen and say, okay, how do we fix it, or how do we at least keep it under control or make sure that it doesn't rear its head again if, again, what's alleged may have happened? And people are just frustrated, don't you think?
Well, I would suggest that maybe Marilyn Moore can channel that frustration in her write-in campaign, her imminent write-in campaign, and if she were to become mayor, that would probably change the culture in the city.
What chance do you think, Ken Dixon, does she have in this write-in campaign? I mean, we know Mike Jarjura did it a bunch of years ago. I think she's got a shot. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. Never say never. And the machine vote, you know, which she won, the people at the polls, that indicates something. And then you can go back to last November, or I'm sorry, last summer.
Yeah.
When Mayor Joe Ganim took his $1 million summer vacation and ran for governor, he only won his own town by a couple of thousand votes and lost 168 other towns, crushingly.
So you think that could be, you think that pattern might continue?
No, I'm saying that if Marilyn Moore can channel that whatever feeling, she's got a shot.
Yeah, interesting. Well, first of all, she needs that. I wonder if she'll go the Jarjura way here and Ken and get all those pencils made. Remember those? Vote for Mayor Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
She's going to have to raise some money to buy those pencils.
Yeah, and then as I said the other day, just tongue-in-cheek, airdrop them all over Bridgeport. You know, just have them take off from Sikorsky and a couple of Cessnas and just, you know, strafe the city with them. That'd be a good story for you, huh? How about that?
people be losing eyes.
Look at that. What's up? You put your eye out with that pen, pencil. Hey, Ken Dixon, Ken, thanks. I urge folks to read it. It's in the Connecticut Post, big expose here on some of the absentee ballot alleged shenanigans. Ken, thank you. Well, we know you're busy, and thanks for the update on what's happening Monday. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ken. Bye-bye. There you go. Ken Dixon, Connecticut Post. So apparently now a news conference set on, Monday coming up. So now the State Elections Enforcement Commission is out there getting into this. And the mayor said, you know, he wants to know, allegedly he said he wants to know what might have allegedly gone on. So, and again, as Gene Rabineau said the other day from the League of Women Voters, it's a numbers game. It's a numbers situation where, again, because Joe Ganim won this by such a large margin, the absentees essentially was roughly 900 to 300, 967 to 313. You know, you would have to disqualify probably, you know, you'd have to disqualify 300 of those roughly. I'm just looking at the numbers because she did win the the polling place ballots by about 400. So you'd have to knock out 200 or 300 of those. This is just like off the eyelash math here to really throw the election back into doubt. Man, can you imagine? Can you imagine if shenanigans were found and verified, which is a pretty tall order, as Gene told us a few days ago. Imagine that, though. A lot more to come before Election Day here. Who knows what's going to happen in the general.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Thank you, Mr. Announcer. I appreciate that. Second half of the show, hour number three of our daily four-hour get-together. I hope, sincerely, that you're having a great day, heading to or from work, heading to or from school, heading to or from... It's not happy hour, I guess, now, huh? Well, you know what? You make that early get-out, right? How many of you are banging them down at 3, 4 o'clock on a Friday? Yeah, Aaron just cracked open the 40 of Colt 45 for both of us here in the... Oh, we're not supposed to mention that here. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, to something a lot more serious right now. Our buddy, our pal from Meriden, Len Suzio, former Republican state Senate member, joins us. Len, as you know, keeps an eye on a lot of things for us. One of the things he watches, and frankly, he was proudly a thorn in the side of the Malloy administration, the governor, and his criminal justice supervisor, Mike Lawler, in keeping an eye on who was getting out of prison in Connecticut early on the governor's much-touted early release program. Now, granted, some of these people behave like angels in prison. A lot of people, well, you know what, whatever. Let them out. But there are some people, A, who shouldn't be getting out before they serve their whole sentence, and B, like Frankie Resto, got out early and went ahead and killed people. And Len joins us. Len, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, Paul. It's good to end the week with a conversation with you on Friday afternoon.
Yes, and we've just cracked open the booze here in the studio, so we're all good. No, I'm kidding. You'll be right there. Yeah. Well, I know. I know when you were in the General Assembly, that's probably how you felt. But you know.
Oh yeah.
Len, you've been keeping an eye on the early release program, and you found out that. Well, first we heard that somebody earlier a couple of days ago is being released early who was involved in an absolutely heinous crime here in the state many years ago. And not only are they being released, they're being released early. Talk a little about that. What did you find out?
Yeah, well, as you say, the crime, if the audience understood how graphic it was and how bad it was, I think most people might pull over the road to recover because it involved a brutal a gang rape and a beating of a 13-year-old girl. There were five young men and three women. They ganged up on this little 13-year-old.
And folks might remember, Len, this is the Marianne Measles case. We should mention the name here, yeah.
That's right. Yep. That's right. It's publicly known. And then after beating, sexually assaulting her or raping her, they beat her up, and then they took her, dragged her into the river, and held her down until she drowned. I mean, it's just a horrible way to go. It's been an awful experience. And again, eight people were involved one way or the other. Here was a little 13-year-old girl. Well, it was announced the other day that one of the women that was involved in that crime, Maggie Mae Bennett, is scheduled to be released on October 10th, having served 17 years of a 19-year sentence for conspiracy in the crime. She's getting out 2 years ahead of schedule because she accumulated, while in the prison, over 700 days worth of early release credits, which are the credits are administered under this program that Governor Malloy started in 2011. You know, it's just, to me, it's dismaying given how ugly, how terrible this crime was, that anybody should be getting time off early at all. This young girl, 13 years old, just died a horrific death. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, she suffered greatly, obviously, before she was killed. And it just upsets me to even think about this, that she, you know, that someone who participated in this crime, even though she herself didn't actually kill her, she was involved in the gang that was there and was part of the whole, the group, the mob that assaulted both sexually and physically this poor little girl.
Yeah, as I remember, they assaulted her because she had apparently was hanging out or had relations with somebody they didn't like. And Lena was a heinous thing. And look, I think you and I can both agree that if you're going to release people early, if it was, I don't know, somebody stole something, you know, somebody knocked off a grocery store or somebody did something, Len, that didn't result in bodily harm. They did something stupid, right? They acknowledge that it was a dumb thing. They promised to never do it again. I mean, the parole board, people understand. They know, and I have relatives in criminal justice. They always tell me, we know who we can reasonably trust and who we can't, right?
Right.
I think people can will be okay with releasing those people early. But again, some of these crimes, Len, maybe I'm a Neanderthal. I don't know. I'm sorry if I am. I think that if you're given X amount of years, Len, you should serve X amount of years.
Absolutely. And in this case, too, she, of the whole group, she got the lightest sentence. And, you know, she did cooperate, I guess, in helping convict some of the men that were involved in the assault. But she did get, basically, she got what virtue was a pled down a sentence to begin with. And now it's even shortened even more by the application of the risk reduction credits. There's just no sense of justice. I just can't imagine what the mother and sister of this young girl are feeling today. You know, their daughter and sister are gone forever. And again, suffered a horrific death. They must have no sense of justice in the system.
Well, I saw that what one of the family members did speak out, and they're appalled, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And by the way, don't forget, the risk reduction, the early release program became implemented in 2011, several years after this woman was convicted and put in prison. And when it was implemented, they applied retroactive credits to all the inmates that were in prison at that time. And she got hundreds of 275 days of early release credits retroactive before the law was passed. So she not only earned them, in quotes, while she was in jail after the law was passed, she was given hundreds of days of early release credits, you know, without even knowing she was going to be getting them. It's just a farce. And there's just no sense of justice in this case. And again, I'm not saying, look, she should be in jail forever, although this girl, unfortunately, is dead forever.
Yeah.
And suffered greatly at the same time. It wasn't a quick death. This is just another example why the law just undermines, in my opinion, the whole concept of justice and undermines the public's confidence in the justice that's meted out by our system and the courts. It's just, I think most people listening to this would just say, there's something grossly wrong with this. This woman should have served her full sentence, which was, you know, a reduced sentence to begin with.
Yeah. Len, I know you've talked to a lot of people about this. You've talked to prison officials. You've confronted correction officials. You've talked to families. What have you been told over the years, Len? Is the point of this? In other words, do they do these risk reduction credits to, I guess I would say, you know, keep the inmate focused? And they say if you behave, you'll get out earlier. Is that the point?
Well, ostensibly, the idea is to give inmates an incentive to reform their lives. But the problem is that the system has never been properly implemented to begin with. How can you give retroactive credits and claim it's affected or given people motivation to change their lives?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it didn't affect their behavior at all. And also, by the way, the motivation it's providing is to get out of prison early. Once they're out of prison, the motivation is gone. It's just, you know, so in fact, if anything, the very fact that you can get incarcerated and put in prison and know that you can get out early because of this program encourages crime because people know that the sentences are never going to be served in their completion. They can just go through the motions ostensibly participating in some of these courses, but there's nothing to check out that they've learned anything, that they've actually reformed at all. The former executive director of the Board of Pardons and Paroles, John Lotta, mm-hmm. has spoken out publicly about this, and you may want to have him on your show sometime. But John served in the Department of Correction, I think, for close to 30 years in various jobs, and the last one being the executive director of the Board of Pardons and Paroles. And he said basically that the system has never been done the right way. It's a failure, and it should be reformed or repealed altogether. I've also had various correction officers approach me personally who expressed to me that the system's widely gamed in the prison by the prisoners, knowing that if they go along and just sit in a class or even sign up for a class, they get these credits to get out early. So I'm not against, I want to make it clear to your audience, I do believe that it's possible for people to reform their lives, but you've got to have the right programs to help them do that. And in my opinion, it never should be done using this as an incentive, getting out of jail early, because the only way people permanently reform their lives is if they see the wrong in what they did do. If all they're doing is being motivated by getting out of jail early, well, again, the incentive is completely gone when they're out of jail early. And the recidivism statistics show overwhelmingly that these inmates who participate in this program was supposed to reform them, it fails overwhelmingly, at least 2-1, if not more. 67-68% of the time, these inmates who participate in the program return to prison within a few years after they've been released, having committed yet another crime. So it obviously failed in the overwhelming majority of cases. And you and I have had conversations mm-hmm. before where I identified over 15,000 violent crimes committed by criminals who participated in the program, supposedly to rehabilitate them. And yet when they were released from prison, they resumed to a life of violent crime. And I'm talking about rape, murder, sexual assault of different types. And the evidence is so overwhelming that the system fails far more often than it succeeds. It's grossly irresponsible for the governor and the legislature to allow it to continue like it is. At the very least, the governor ought to call for hearings on the program and what its experience has been.
And Len, just to step in here, you mentioned something a couple of seconds ago that I know, and knowing people inside the system, the proof of the pudding of this stuff is always, as you mentioned, the recidivism rate, whether it's an early release program or an education program, a mentor program, an intern program, they always look, Len, as you mentioned, at the recidivism rate. That's really the only way they can measure this stuff.
That's right. And the Department of Correction is actually breaking the law right now, because there was a law passed in 2015. I think it was PA 15-216. It requires them to, on a quarterly basis, publish data about the prisoners who were discharged having been participating in this program and any that have been rearrested and incarcerated for another crime. They're supposed to disclose the statistics about that, and they're supposed to disclose the nature of the crimes that are being committed. But it's now 4 years, and they have not complied with that law. All they've done is they've issued some data about how many prisoners were released, but they have failed to address the recidivism, and they failed to fulfill their responsibility to disclose the crimes being committed by these inmates who were discharged from prison early. You and I know, Paul, we talked about it, over 15,000 violent crimes. That's tantamount to six violent crimes every day for 8 years now.
And yet, Len, and yet when you raise this to Democratic legislators or to the previous administration, what are you told? Well, I know one thing is you told me it's like trying to twist arms to get the actual numbers. I know you've had to file FOI requests, but when you would confront the governor's office on this, or the former policies are there for criminals Mike Lawler, what kind of response would you get?
They would avoid me like the plague, to be honest with you, Paul. They didn't want to. They know that they're on the wrong side of this issue, and they did not ever want to get into a public debate about it. I had a private meeting with Lawler after the one of the first murders that were committed by Frankie the Razor Resto back in 2012. And it went for 2 hours, and I asked him why they let Resto go, even though they knew he was dangerous. And he said, well, we had to let him go. And I said, what do you mean you had to let him go? You knew he was dangerous. He said, well, this law compels us to let him go. I said, well, that's the problem with the law. They knew. The police chief here in Meriden, where I live, told me that Resto, when he met him after he'd been arrested for the murder of this guy locally, the poor Abraham Ghazal, he said he was one of the most dangerous criminals he's ever run into in his 35 years of policing activity. Yet he was out on the street days early because of this program. And because of that, poor Ibrahim Ghazal was murdered in cold.
Yeah, I mean, Resto. I mean, look, Len. I always said, and you and I have talked about this. If you opened up a dictionary and looked up the word scumbag, this guy was he would have been the picture. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a poster boy of what's wrong with this program. And here's another example again of a woman who participated in a horrific, unbelievably violent, brutal, cruel crime, and she may not have actually beat the girl up or raped her, of course, but she was there. She was part of the gang that was involved in this, and she got a light sentence to begin with, a reduced sentence to begin with, and now she's getting out even years ahead of that.
Well, Len, listen, we're short on time. I know you're upset with this, but I applaud you for what you're doing. Keep up the good fight, and we'll be in touch, Len. Thank you.
All right, Paul, have a great weekend, and don't have too many of those cold 45s.
No. Those are for later. Thanks, Len. Len Susio there, former member of the State Senate. There you go, folks. You heard it. They admittedly, Len's had people admit to him inside that they're letting dangerous people back out on the street too early because of a law. How's that make you feel, huh? From absentee ballots to how rotisserie chicken is going to cost you. It'll set you back a little more now. Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly is with us. Kevin, thank God we finally got the tax on rotisserie chickens and the hot food at your local store straightened out. It was a magnificent thing to watch, Kevin.
Well, Paul, first of all, it's always great to talk with you.
Well, thank you.
We know the work week is coming to an end.
Yes.
But unfortunately, in this instance, while the governor has, changed tack and DRS has decided to issue a new policy decision, the fact remains that the language that was passed by the Democrats in their budget still exists. And even when the DRS commissioner talked about it, he feels that this is within realm of reason and that he believes legally sufficient. My concern is, who do we represent in Hartford? I know my district is a middle-class district, and that's the perspective I take, and that's who I try to protect. And they need protection from this law that was passed because the language still exists, which means it can still be interpreted the original way that the governor interpreted it and the way that DRS looked at it. And unless you take that language off the books, the taxpayers and middle-class families and people on fixed incomes can be at risk.
You know, Kevin, I find it hard to believe, and you're up there, and I've been watching this body for 20 or 30 years. Kevin, I find it hard to believe, and maybe I'm off base on this. You tell me if I am. That's fine. I find it hard to believe that in this whole process, and I talked with Chris Davis from Ellington about this yesterday, when he himself and other people said, hey, wait a minute, be careful about putting the language grocery store in there, but it was put in. And Kevin, people have called me on this show during the week and agree with me. How is it that the governor's office, his representatives, Ms. McCaul and the budget office, the leadership there, and DRS and Commissioner Jackson didn't all sit down in a room and say, okay, what is the real meaning here? What is your intention? And does this language go beyond that or fall short of that? That, Kevin, to me, that's mind-boggling. You tell me if I'm wrong here or not.
Paul, you're not wrong. When we got the budget, and believe me, Paul, we weren't in the negotiating room. We weren't given a heads up. We were given the document, 600 pages, the day of. We scour through the document. This is a point that I spoke on specifically on the floor of the Senate, saying that this tax is going to hurt middle-class working families. And Democrats, I hear all the time during the campaigns that they're out to tax the 1%. Well, let me tell you, this tax does not fall on the 1%. It falls squarely on people that are hardworking middle-class families that can't afford this type of tax. Now, I warned them. And, you know, you would expect more out of somebody that actually has all the power, mm-hmm. all the resources, all the brain power of state government to be able to get it right. And obviously they haven't.
And Kevin, it's frightening. I want to go back to something you said here in the short time we have left. You said that you got a 600-page budget. How long before the vote was taken?
It was hours. You know, and you look at it, and you can scour through, and we all work together, and you know, in our caucus, and you split it up, and you figure out the different parts. But
yeah.
Once again, there's a lack of transparency. You even bring these points out; they don't want to hear it because they're going to adopt the budget they want to adopt. And even with all the pressure we have, they are still not saying, let's fix this for the taxpayers. And it's, who do you represent? Do you represent the middle-class taxpayers? If you do, you'll get rid of the language and you won't put them at risk. But if you represent government itself, then you want to leave the language so that they have the leeway to get the revenue they need for whatever government program they're going to spend the money on, which doesn't necessarily help middle-class families. And that's where I think the listeners can still help, because we signed a petition this week. We have 14 members in the Senate. We need to get to a majority, so we need 5 Democrats. So if people would call their state senators, their state representatives, to state leadership of the Democratic Party and caucuses in Hartford to encourage their members to sign on to this petition to protect middle-class taxpayers, that would go a long way to making sure that this grocery tax doesn't find a way back to threaten the middle-class taxpayer.
Kevin, thank you. So it's still in there. It may be stunned, but it hasn't been exercised, is what you're telling us.
Yeah, it's still on the books. And until you fix the problem, and this is why I'm surprised that the Democrats don't want to fix this for middle-class taxpayers, mm-hmm. unless that's not the focus of yep. who they protect. We should have a special session and just get this right. Make sure that the taxpayers aren't put at risk. But it's not just taxpayers.
No, it's
seniors.
It's a fundamental issue of doing stuff above board, too. Kevin,
correct.
Thank you. We're short on time here, but I do appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, buddy.
Take care, Paul.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. Take your final calls coming back on this. Folks, how about that? How about that? To get a 600-page budget with a couple of hours to go before a vote. I mean, come on.